welcome everybody to the 2013 annual Christmas shows. I'm Olivia, as most of you already know. I've been doing this now for this is my seventh year. And I normally have two shows, Saturday and Sunday before Christmas, but I just have so darn much good stuff this year that I'm making it three nights in a row, always ending on Sunday with our favorite, many of ours and mine, rare reading by author Truman Capote of his own A Christmas Memory. Get out the Kleenexes. That's all I'm saying. That'll be on Sunday with some other stuff, too. I actually found a lot of great material, including complete movies that were presented on the radio with the live cast, in most cases, the same cast that did the movies. Now, when I was growing up, because I'm old, we did listen to radio a lot. Sure, there was TV, but, you know, it's not like it is today. It was black and white, and there wasn't that much programming. And I remember listening by the big radio in the corner of our dining room. It was a big cabinet, you know, and I would sit there and listen to the stories and the plays. And in my mind, I would paint the picture of the characters, what they look like, the places, the situations. You would hear, you know, somebody clapping to make a sound, or a creaking sound of a door opening, or the sound of somebody walking up the stairs. And you had to supply the picture to all of that in your mind. Now today, of course, kids are growing up with iPods, iPads, computers, games, Wii, and all kinds of things that supply them with beautiful, bright, colorful images. But, you know, I think that in a way, I think they're losing out. That's why I encourage every parent listening who has younger children, if not tonight, tomorrow and Sunday, get your kids around to listen to some of these old stories and let them create their own story from it, their own vision. I think it really encourages creativity and imagination, and it's a lost, really valuable thing that we had back in the old days. And radio, it's really good. Now, there are several new things that I have this year, including some Lux Radio Theater presentations. Lux Radio Theater was presented by Lux Soap, that was made by Lever Company. And it was broadcast on the NBC Blue Network from 1934 to 1935, then on CBS Radio 35 to 54, and back on NBC from 54 to 55. Cecil B. DeMille, the legendary director, took over as the host of the show on June 1st, 1936. Until January of 1945, so he was there doing that for 9 years. When he was away or unavailable, he was temporarily replaced by other celebrities, including Leslie Howard, Edward Arnold, and others. Lux Radio Theater strove to feature as many of the original stars of the original stage and film productions as possible, usually paying them, now can you believe this, $5,000. For an appearance. We're talking about huge stars, $5,000 per appearance. In 1936, when sponsor Lever Brothers moved the show from New York City to Hollywood, the program began then to change and emphasize adaptations of films rather than the plays themselves. Oftentimes, the radio version would air after the movie release, but two gems came to the radio waves on Lux Theater before their successful movie versions. One was Pinocchio. That aired on Christmas Day in 1939. It was an incredibly momentous occasion because Pinocchio did not officially premiere in a movie till February 40. The other radio show that came out before the film was It's a Wonderful Life, which premiered on Lux Theater in March of 1947 before Frank Capra's beloved later film. The original, which is going to be heard tonight, starred James Stewart and Donna Reed in their iconic roles. So without further ado, Lux Theater, and this is It's a Wonderful Life. Okay, It's a Wonderful Life. Jimmy Stewart, 1947.
Lux presents Hollywood. Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, bring you the Lux Radio Theater, starring James Stewart, Donna Reed, and Victor Moore in It's a Wonderful Life. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. William Keeley.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight we bring you one of the season's most inspiring hits, a Liberty Films production that's been nominated for the highest screen award. Yes, It's a Wonderful Life. And we present it now with its original fine stars, Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed. Jimmy in the role which won him a nomination for the best performance of the year. Also in our cast is starred that fine comedian, Victor Moore. It's a Wonderful Life is the drama of a typical American. Might be you, it might be me. He dreams of glory, he lives in hope, he loves and doubts, and only Providence puts a final value on his service to humanity. Our story starts before the war, when life was normal. Shortages were generally unknown, and simple luxuries like Lux soap were abundant. I won't say that's the only reason people said it's a wonderful life, but I do know from the thousands of letters in our files that most of them said it's a wonderful soap. And they keep right on saying it day after day. In fact, the popularity of Lux soap is what makes it possible to present such entertainment as Frank Capra's great production, It's a Wonderful Life, starring Jimmy Stewart as George, Donna Reed as Mary Hatch, and Victor Moore as Clarence. This is the story of George Bailey, citizen of Bedford Falls, New York. George Bailey, who more than anything under the sun wanted to see the world, the wonderful, exciting world that lay somewhere beyond the limits of his hometown. Oddly enough, this story does not begin in Bedford Falls. In fact, it doesn't begin anywhere in the world. It begins in heaven, where the superintendent of angels has just summoned an apprentice angel named Clarence.
Oh, I'm really going down to Earth, sir? Oh, how splendid.
Yes. There's a very discouraged man down there, Clarence. George Bailey. At exactly 10:45 p.m., Earth time, he'll be thinking seriously of ending his life.
Oh, dear, dear, his life.
Now, I want you to stop him if you can. Now, sit down, sit down. I'll give you Bailey's case history.
Sir, if I should accomplish my mission, may I perhaps get my wings? I've been waiting over 200 years now, and, well, people are beginning to talk.
Clarence, what's that book?
The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, sir. I was reading it when you sent for me.
Oh, fine book. Excellent. Well, you do a good job on George Bailey, and we'll see about your wings.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Now, listen. When George Bailey was a boy, two events occurred that you should keep in mind. One was when his young brother, Harry, fell through the ice and almost drowned. George saved him.
Brother fell through the ice. George saved him.
Ever since, George has had a bad ear. All that icy water, you understand.
Yeah, bad ear. Yes, sir.
The other event came a few months later. George used to work after school in Mr. Gower's drugstore. One day, Mr. Gower's only son died of influenza. It was a terrible blow, and poor Mr. Gower tried to lose his grief in whiskey.
Where have you been, George? Mrs. Blaine's called twice. What happened to her prescription? You lost it, didn't you?
No, Mr. Gower. Here it is.
Well, you good for nothing. Don't you know that Blaine girl's very sick?
Mr. Gower, my ear. You're hurting my sore ear.
Teach you to loaf, you lazy brat.
Mr. Gower, you don't know what you're doing. You put something wrong in those capsules.
Shut up.
Oh, I know you feel bad, but look, Mr. Gower, look. This bottle, you use this bottle to make up the capsules. It's poison.
Poison?
Don't hurt my sore ear again, Mr.
Poison.
Gower.
Oh, George.
That's what
George.
Is the liver, Mr. Gower. All I wanted was to make
George,
sure.
George.
Well, Clarence, that was George Bailey as a boy. When he grew up, he wanted to go to college, but there just wasn't the money. So he worked 4 years in the Building and Loan Association.
Building and Loan Association?
Oh, I forgot to tell you. George's father was in the building and loan business. He and George's uncle, Billy. High ideals and low bank account. Anyway, George worked for his father and saved enough to see him through the university. That summer, though, he was going to Europe. Got a job on a cattle boat. Do a little traveling before cop.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, it's hard to realize that my last night in the Bailey boarding house.
We're sure going to miss you, George.
Oh, I'm going to miss you too, Pop. Hey, what's the matter? You look tired.
Oh, I had another tussle with old Henry Potter today.
Well, I thought when you put him on the board of directors, he'd ease up.
Oh, so did I.
I just can't understand a man like Mr. Potter. He can't begin to spend all the money he
has. I guess Potter owns about everything he wants in Bedford Falls except our building and loan. That's why he hates us.
Hey, George, can I borrow your tuxedo studs?
Yeah, help yourself, Harry.
Well, where are they, in your suitcase?
I'm not taking a tuxedo on a cattle boat, you know.
Say, where'd you get that suitcase anyway?
Oh, Mr. Gower, going away present. And one of these days you're going to see that bag all covered with travel labels. Italy, Baghdad, Samarkand.
Going to have a pretty full summer, eh?
I'm going to have a pretty full life.
Hey, why don't you come to the dance tonight?
Why? I'd be bored to death.
Well, you couldn't want a better death. Lots of pretty girls. Hey, I got to hurry.
I wish we could send Harry to college with you, George.
Oh, we've got that all figured out now, Pop. He'll take over my job at the building and loan, work 4 years like I did, and then he'll go.
Well, he's pretty young for that job.
Well, no younger than I was.
Maybe you were born older, George.
Huh?
George, when you get out of college, I don't suppose you'd come back to the building and loan.
Oh, Pop, I just couldn't. I couldn't face being cooped up the rest of my life in a shabby little office. I'm sorry, Pop. Now, I didn't mean that, but it's just this business of nickels and dimes. I'd go crazy. I want to do something big, something important.
In a small way, we are doing something important, George. In that shabby little office, we help people figure out how they can own their own homes.
I know, Pop. I just wish I felt that I just feel like if I didn't get away, I'd bust.
You're right, boy. You get yourself an education, then get out of here.
Oh, Pop, Pop, you want a shock? I think you're a pretty great guy.
Well, thanks, George. I'm glad to hear it. Look, why don't you go on over to Harry's dance? You'd have a good time.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it will drop in. Yeah, maybe it will at that.
So, George Bailey went to a dance. Is that important, Joseph?
Why, it was at the dance he met Mary Hatch.
Oh.
And 3 hours later, he was walking her home. George and Mary were feeling pretty good, Clarence. As a matter of fact, wonderful.
Buffalo girls, can't you come out tonight? Can't you come out tonight? Can't you come out tonight? Buffalo girls, can't you come out tonight? And dance by the light of the moon.
Oh, hot dog. Oh, boy, just like an organ.
At least.
Hey, you know something? If it wasn't me talking, I'd say you were the prettiest girl in town.
Well, why don't you say it?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I will. Like, how old are you anyway?
18.
18?
Too young or too old?
No. It's just right. It sort of fits you. Hey, look where we are.
Hmm? Oh, the old Granville house.
Yeah, I got to throw a rock.
Oh, no, don't. I love that old house.
Well, no, don't you know about deserted houses? You make a wish and then throw a rock.
George, but it's such a lovely old place. I wish I lived there.
In there? I wouldn't live in it as a ghost. Now, watch. What's this? Here we go. How about it, huh? Pretty good shot, huh? Broke a window, huh?
What'd you wish, George?
Oh, I don't know. Not just one wish, a whole hatful.
Mary, I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world. Italy, Greece, the Parthenon, the Colosseum. And then I'm coming back here and go to college and see what they know. And then I'm going to build things. I'm going to build airfields and skyscrapers 100 stories high and bridges a mile long. And then I'm going to... Hey, Mary. What is it you want? What do you want, huh? You want the moon? All you got to do is just say the word now.
Okay. The moon, I'll take it. Then what?
Then what? Well, then you could swallow it. And it'd dissolve like an aspirin, you know. And the moonbeams would shoot out of your fingers and the ends of your hair. And you think I'm talking too much?
Yes, why don't you kiss her instead of talking her to death?
How's that?
Youth is wasted on the wrong people.
Why? Hey, just a minute, mister. Hey, you come back here, I'll show you some kissing
George,
if you want to.
George!
Hey, Uncle Billy, look here. I'm going to kiss Mary. Watch.
George, get in the car quick. Your father's had a stroke.
What?
George,
father's had...
get in. Hurry.
Well, George's father died that night, Clarence. So, of course, George couldn't go to Europe. But that fall, just as he was ready to leave for college, the directors of the building and loan had a meeting. They were going to appoint a successor to Mr. Bailey.
What was that you said, Mr. Potter?
I said as long as Peter Bailey's dead, let's dissolve the building and loan. We don't need it.
Now, wait a minute.
Oh, you wait a minute. Peter Bailey was not a businessman. Ideals without common sense can ruin a town. What do we get? A discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class.
Hold on, Mr.
Potter.
Oh,
I meant no disrespect, George, but...
Oh, wait a minute there. Why my father ever started this cheap penny ante building and loan, I'll never know. But just remember this, Mr. Potter, this rabble you're talking about, they do most of the working and the paying and living and dying in this community. Well, is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath? Anyway, my father didn't think so. People were human beings to him. But to you, a warped, frustrated old man, they're cattle. Well, in my book, Mr. Potter, he died a much richer man than you'll ever be.
I'm not interested in your book, George. I'm talking about the building and loan.
You're talking about something you can't get your fingers on that's galling. That's what you're talking about. Well, this town needs this measly one-horse institution, if only to have some place where people can borrow a few dollars without crawling to you. Now, come on, Uncle Billy.
What happened, George?
Yeah, all we heard was a lot of yelling.
Boy, oh, boy, you should have heard George.
Yeah, they're in there voting us out of business.
Well, who cares? I can get another job. I'm only 41.
45.
Well, you get out of here, George. You missed your boat trip. Do you want to miss college, too?
George, we've just voted Potter down. We're still in business.
Whoopee! We're still in business! We're still in business!
But there's one condition, George. They've appointed you to take your father's place.
Appoint me? But I'm going to college. Look, this is my last chance. Uncle Billy's your man.
George, you've got to take it. They'll vote with Potter otherwise. They said so. They even...
I know. George Bailey didn't go to college.
That's right, Terrence. He gave his college money to Harry. Harry went instead.
But what happened to that good-looking girl, you know, Mary?
Old George saw her now and then. Not very often, though, because Mary went away to school, too. Anyway, George waited 4 years more for Harry to come back and take over the building and loan. He could still see the world. He planned to work in the oil fields, Venezuela. Except when Harry came home, he wasn't alone. There was a girl with him, his wife.
George?
Yeah, I'm out here on the porch, Mother. I just thought I'd get some air.
Well, how do you like your new sister-in-law?
Oh, she's swell.
Looks like she can keep Harry on his toes.
Yeah, I keep him out of Bedford Falls anyway.
What do you mean?
Well, Ruth's father, he's got a wonderful job for Harry up in Buffalo.
Buffalo? Well, that means you...
Yeah.
You can't...
Yeah.
George, did you know Mary Hatch is back from school?
Hmm? Yeah.
Nice girl, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, stop grunting.
Mm-hmm.
Give me one good reason why you shouldn't call on Mary.
Well, Sam Wainwright. Sam's crazy about Mary.
Well, she's not crazy about him.
Well, now, how do you know that? Did she discuss it with you?
Besides, Sam's away in New York.
Oh, and all's fair in love and war. Uh-huh, I see. Okay, Mother, I think I'll go out and find that girl and do a little passionate necking.
Oh, George.
Bye, Miss Bailey. By the way, do you want any books at the library?
Library? George! George, you go and see Mary. Do you hear? George, is that you out there?
Oh, hello,
are you coming in?
I just happened to be passing by here.
Oh, I thought you were picketing. Have you made up your mind?
How's that?
Have you made up your mind?
About what?
About coming in. Your mother just phoned. She said you were coming over.
My mother just phoned. What does she mean, Carla? I just happened to be passing by, that's all. I didn't...
Well?
Well, all right, I'll come in for a minute, but I didn't tell anybody I was coming here. You feel I can't go out for a walk nowadays without you. When did you get back?
Tuesday.
Hmm. Where'd you get that dress?
Do you like it?
It's all right.
Well, no point standing here on the porch. Come on in.
I still can't understand it. I didn't tell anybody I was coming here, you know.
Would you rather leave?
Well, no, I don't want to be rude. Sit down for a while.
It's nice about your brother and Ruth, isn't it?
Yeah. That's all right.
Don't you like her?
Well, of course I like her. She's a peach.
Oh, just marriage in general you're not enthusiastic about, hmm?
No. Marriage is all right for a lot of people. It's all right for Harry and Sam Wainwright and you.
For Sam?
Harry?
It's George Bailey, Mother.
What's he want?
I don't know. What do you want?
Me? Not a thing, and I just came in to get warm.
He's making violent love to me, Mother.
You just tell him to go right back home. Sam said he'd call you tonight from New York, didn't he?
I guess so. How about some music?
You know, your mother needs... You know, I didn't come here to...
What did you come here for, then?
I don't know. You're supposed to be the one with all the answers. You tell me.
Oh, why don't you go home?
I don't know why I came here in the first place. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, the way you're shouting, you think that...
You think what? All right, I'll get it. George, on your way out, would you mind turning off the phonograph?
I'd be very happy to. I've gone crazy, song.
Hello? Sam?
Mary! Gee, it's good to hear your voice.
How are you, Sam?
I forgot my hat.
Hee-haw.
What?
Oh, I was just talking to an old friend of yours, George Bailey.
Old Mossback George?
Old Mossback George.
Well, put him on. I'll talk to him, too.
Wait a second. George!
He doesn't want to speak to George.
He does so. He asked for him.
Why'd you call me? Because if you're... I'm in a hurry.
Sam wants to talk to you.
Oh. Hiya, Sam.
Hey, fine pal you are, trying to steal my girl.
What do you mean? Nobody's trying to steal anybody's girl. Here, Mary, take the...
No. Wait, George. I want to speak to you both. Tell Mary to get in the extension upstairs.
He says for you to get on the extension upstairs.
I can't. Mother's on the extension.
I am not.
We can both hear, George. Just put your head a little closer.
What?
Yeah, that's better. We're listening, Sam.
Well, I have a big deal coming up that's going to make us all rich. George, remember that time you told me about making plastics out of soybeans?
Soybeans? Yeah. Soybeans, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
my father's checked into it, George. See, and now he's going to put up a factory. How do you like that?
A factory, huh?
And here's the point, George. I may have a job for you unless you're still married to that broken-down building and loan. Oh, Mary?
I'm here.
You tell that guy I'm giving him a chance of a lifetime. Do you hear?
He says it's the chance of a lifetime.
Hey, give me that phone.
Here's George again, Sam. George.
Now, you listen to me, Mary. I don't want any plastics, and I don't want any job, and I don't want to get married ever to anyone. Do you understand that? I want to do what I want to do, and you're not going to trick me. And you're... Mary.
George.
Mary. Oh, Mary, darling, I love you, Mary.
Well, so George... Bailey and Mary Hatch were...
Yes, George and Mary were married. Mm. And they started off on their honeymoon in Ernie Bishop's taxicab.
Hey, where are you two going on this here now honeymoon?
We're going to shoot the works, Ernie. A whole week in New York, a whole week in Bermuda, the highest hotel, the oldest champagne, the hottest music, and the prettiest wife.
So you're finally getting out of Bedford Falls, huh? Then what?
Then what, honey?
After that, who cares?
That doesn't. Hey, you know, Mrs. Bailey, I haven't kissed you.
Hey, George, there's something funny going on over there. Look over there at the bank. It looks like a run.
All right. Pull over a minute, will you, Ernie?
George, let's not stop. Please, let's go straight to the
station.
Now,
wait a minute. I better see what it is. I'll be right back.
George, please. George!
In a few moments, we'll return with the second act of It's a Wonderful Life, starring James Stewart, Donna Reed, and Victor Moore.
and wild and sweet, the words repeat of peace on earth, goodwill to men. I thought, as now this day had come, the belfries of all Christendom had rung so long the unbroken song of peace on earth, goodwill to men.
Peace on earth, goodwill to men.
And in despair I bowed my head. There is no peace on earth, I said, for hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men.
Goodwill to men. Then peal the bells more loud and deep. God is not dead, nor does he sleep.
The wrong shall fail, the right prevail, with peace on earth, goodwill to men.
This is
Act Two of It's a Wonderful Life, starring Jimmy Stewart as George, Donna Reed as Mary, and Victor Moore as Clarence. Well, we're back in heaven again, where the superintendent of angels is reviewing the case history of a mortal named George Bailey. Clarence, the apprentice angel, is very eager to depart on his mission to the earth.
Poor George Bailey. Oh, he's certainly in desperate trouble, Joseph. I'll go to him at once.
Now, you sit down, Clarence. Sit down. We're nowhere near the point where George Bailey's thinking of taking his life.
We're not?
Now, where were we? Yes. George and Mary had just started out on their honeymoon when they ran smack into the financial panic of 1932. In the waiting room of the building and loan, 100 frantic people were clamoring for their savings.
Hey, what's going on, Uncle Billy? What's happened? All those people out there.
This is a pickle, George. All I know is the bank called our loan an hour ago. I had to hand over all our cash.
Holy mackerel.
Whole town's gone crazy. Bank's in the same spot we are.
Our charter, too.
What about our charter?
Our charter says we have to stay open until 6 p.m. The state can take away our license if we don't.
How can we stay open till 6 without any money? George, where are you going?
Out to talk to those people. Come on. Now, please, folks, just a minute.
How about our money, George? Where's our money?
Oh, come on, now, please. Oh, wait a minute. Now, listen to me. Now, you're thinking of this place all wrong. Your money's not here. Oh, wait a minute, now, let me tell you, your money's in people's houses, in the Kennedy house and the McLaren house and in your house and 100 others. Now, what are you going to do, foreclose on them?
I got $240 in shares. Now, let me have it.
All right, Charlie, now... You'll get your money in 60 days.
60 days?
Well, now, look, that's what you agreed on when you bought your shares.
I got my money.
Old man Potter's taking over the bank. He'll pay you 50 cents on every dollar.
Then let's take our shares to Potter. Half is better than nothing.
Now, wait a minute. Please, folks, I beg of you not to do this. If Potter gets hold of your shares, he'll be owning this building and loan. And he's got the bank, he's got the bus line, he's got the department stores, and now he's after us because he wants to keep you living in his shacks and paying the kind of rent he decides to charge. Now, we can get through this thing, all right, but we've got to stick together. We've got to have faith in each other.
My husband's out of work. We need money.
I've got doctor bills to pay.
I can't feed my kids on savings.
How much do you need? You still got some money?
Hey, Mary.
Here it is, George. You told me to hold on to it. Would have made a nice honeymoon. Bought furniture, too.
Hey, now, wait a minute, folks. Listen. I've got $2,000. All right, Charlie, how much do you need?
$240.
No, Charlie, now listen. Just enough to tide you over.
I said $240.
Okay. Uncle Billy, give Charlie $240. All right, Ed. Now, how much just to get by on?
Well, $20, I suppose.
Now you're talking. Now, you, Mrs. Thompson, how about you?
$20 will do me.
Good. $20. Uncle Billy, pay it back when you can now. Pay it back when you can. All right. Who's next?
Look at the clock. Look.
5 seconds. 4 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
6 o'clock. We made it. Lock that door, Eustace. Quick.
boy, we're still in business, Uncle Billy. We've even got $2 left.
Hmm? George, there's a call for you.
Okay, and then call my wife, will you? She's probably over at Mother's.
Mrs. Bailey's on the line.
I don't want Miss Bailey. I want my wife, Mrs. Bailey. Miss Bailey, that's my wife. Give me the phone, will you? Hey, Mary, listen, Mary, I'm sorry. I come home. What home? Well, 323 Sycamore. Well, whose home is that? What? Well, Mary, how can I... Well, sure, all right, sure, I'll be there.
Clarence, guess what 323 Sycamore was?
His mother-in-law's house, huh?
Oh, no. Number 323 Sycamore was the old Granville house, the one George threw rocks at and made wishes. Yes, sir, that's where they spent their honeymoon. That's where they started housekeeping. They were still living there 2 years later when old man Potter asked George to stop over at his office.
Sit down, George, sit down, do. Have a cigar?
Well, thank you, sir.
George, you're a young man, married, making, say, $40 a week at the building and loan.
45.
45. Now, if you were some ordinary yokel, I'd say you were doing fine. But George Bailey is intelligent, ambitious. He hates the building and loan almost as much as I do. He's been dying to get out of town ever since he was born, but he's trapped. Trapped into frittering his life away, playing nursemaid to a lot of garlic eaters. Do I paint a correct picture, George, or do I exaggerate?
Well, what's your point, Mr. Potter?
My point is that you're the only man in town who has licked me. George, I want to hire you. Manage my affairs. I'll start you off at $20,000 a year.
$20,000 a year? Are you sure you're talking to me? I'm George Bailey. Don't you remember me? The building and loan, remember?
Yes, George Bailey, whose ship has just come in, providing he has sense enough to climb aboard.
Well, but what about the building and loan?
Confound it, man. I'm offering you a 3-year contract at $20,000 a year. Is it a deal or isn't it?
No. The answer's no, doggone it. If you offered me $1,000,000 to stay around this town and play stooge to you, the answer'd still be no. Now, let me alone. Don't bother.
George, what did Mr. Potter want?
Oh, it's nothing. He just talk. It's nothing. Oh, gee. Mary Hatch. Mary, why in the world did you ever marry a guy like me anyway?
To keep from being an old maid.
I was going to see the world. I was going to build things. I was going to give you the moon. What have I given you? What have I given you? Not even a new dress, not for months. Gee whiz, I feel awful.
So do I. Mornings especially.
I could have married Sam Wainwright, anybody else in town.
I didn't want to marry anybody else. I want my baby to look like you.
No, you didn't even have a honeymoon. And I promised you that you what?
My baby.
Mary... Mary, you mean you're on the nest?
Well, Mary had her baby, Clarence, a boy.
You don't say.
Then she had another one, a girl.
Well, what do you know?
Night after night, George had come home late from the office. Things weren't good with the building and loan. Potter was really bearing down on him. Then came the war. Mary had another baby by then.
Oh.
But she still had time to help out in USO. Uncle Billy sold war bonds. And George's brother Harry became a real hero. Shot down 15 planes.
But George, what about George?
Well, George was 4F, his bad ear. He was an air raid warden. On VE day, he wept and prayed. On VJ day, he wept and prayed again.
We're getting... pretty close to today, aren't we, sir?
Yes, Clarence. You now know almost everything you have to know about George Bailey, except what happened that finds him down there at this moment, wanting to die.
Well, sir, well?
Well, today's the day before Christmas, Earth time. George is pretty excited.
Hey, Tilly! Eustace! Hey, look at the newspaper. Commander Harry Bailey, decorated by the president. That's my kid brother. The Congressional Medal of Honor.
Gosh, George, gosh.
What do you think about the 15 Jap planes? And the last one he got was just about to dive into a transport loaded with soldiers. You know what that means? He saved lives, hundreds of lives. Gee, where's Uncle Billy?
Huh? Well, gone to the bank, George. He's depositing that $8,000.
Good, good, good. Go. Who's that in his office there?
It's that man again, the bank examiner.
Uh-oh. Well, good afternoon, Mr. Carter. Hey, Tilly, get the books from Mr. Carter. Well, you know, that's my brother's picture there, Mr. Carter. He shot down 15 planes, and one of them was just about...
Well, well, Mr. Henry F. Potter come to the bank to deposit some more loot, eh?
Sure, you old fool.
How do you like the news in the paper, Mr. Potter? Just can't keep those Bailey boys down now, can you?
Let me see that newspaper.
Here, sorry I can't chat, you old thief. Got to make a deposit. Here you are, Horace. Deposit slip, bank book, and a very Merry Christmas to you.
You too, Mr. Bailey. Say, you've forgotten something, haven't you?
Horace, I've forgotten things all my life. Get a wiggle on, boy.
But, Mr. Bailey, where's the money?
What's that?
You want to make a deposit?
Well, certainly I want.
Well, it's customary to bring the money with you.
It's gone. Where'd I put it? Where'd I put that money?
A terrible thing, Clarence, terrible. Uncle Billy couldn't find the money because the envelope with the $8,000 was folded up in that newspaper he gave to Old Man Potter.
I just don't know what happened to it, George. I just don't know.
$8,000. Uncle Billy, the bank examiner's here, and it's not our money. It belongs to the depositor.
George, what are we going to do? We've traced every step I took. We can't stand here in the street.
Are you sure you didn't put that envelope in your coat pocket?
I think so. Maybe. Oh, I'm no good to you, George. I'm no good.
Now listen to me. Think, will you? Now try and think.
I can't think anymore. I can't.
Now where's that money, you silly old fool? You know what this means? It means bankruptcy and scandal and prison. One of us is going to jail. Well, it's not going to be me. Now get out of my way. I'm going home.
George, dear, what's wrong? You haven't said a word since you came home.
Well, that banging on that piano, does she have to just keep playing that same piece over and over and over and over again?
What is it, dear? Another hectic day.
Yeah, another red letter day for the
Dad,
babies.
Dad, Murphy's got a brand new car. You should see it.
What's the matter with our car? Isn't it good enough for you?
I'm sorry, Dad. I only...
Run upstairs, Petey. See if Zuzu's all right.
Okay, Mom.
Now, what do you mean? What, see if Zuzu's all right? What do you mean?
Oh, she caught a little cold coming home from school. She didn't button up her coat.
Well, what is it? What do you mean, just a cold?
George, the doctor said it was nothing serious.
The doctor? Was the doctor here?
Well, I thought he'd better look at her.
It's his old drafty house. No wonder we don't all have pneumonia. Might as well be living in a refrigerator. Why did we have to live here in the first place and stay around this measly, crummy old town?
George, what's happened?
Everything's happened. You call this a happy family? Why do we have to have all these kids?
Daddy, how do you spell Frankenstein?
I don't know how you spell. You ask your mother.
Where are you going?
Upstairs to see Zuzu.
Hello? Oh, thank you, Mrs. Welch. I'm sure she'll be all right.
Who's that?
Zuzu's school teacher. What? Oh, yes, the doctor says she'll be fine tomorrow.
Here, give me that phone.
George, please.
Mrs. Welch? Well, this is Mr. Bailey. Say, what kind of a teacher are you anyway? What do you mean sending Zuzu home like that half-naked? Do you realize you'll probably end up with pneumonia just because of your stupidity? You know, maybe my kids aren't the best-dressed kids in town, but at least... Hello? Hello? Janie, will you stop playing that lousy piano? Cut it out! Stop it!
George, for heaven's sake, what's wrong with you?
I'm sorry. Janie, I'm sorry. Mary... I just got to get out of here.
So that's it, George. You're short $8,000 in your accounts, eh?
Now, please, Mr. Potter, I'll pay any sort of a bonus if you still want the building and loan.
You say it was lost. Have you notified the police?
No, sir, I haven't done that yet. Harry's home.
Oh, why come to me? What about your good friend Sam Wainwright?
I can't get a hold of him. He's in Europe.
What kind of security would I have, George? What collateral?
Yes, sir. I have some life insurance here. $15,000 policy.
Mm-hmm. What's your equity in it?
$500.
And you want $8,000? You once called me a warped, frustrated old man. Well, what are you but a warped, frustrated young man crawling on your hands and knees for help? Why don't you go to the riffraff you love so well? Ask them for help.
I'll do anything, Mr. Potter, please. Please help me, miss. My wife and kids...
I'm calling the district attorney. $500. You know something, George? You're worth more dead than you are alive. Now get out of here. Get out.
And all the time, Potter had the $8,000 in his desk drawer. It's still there, Terrence.
But where is George, sir? Where?
Well, he went over to Martini's Cafe. He's had a couple of drinks, Clarence. He's just standing there, sort of in a daze.
Oh, God. Oh, God, dear Father in heaven, I'm not a praying man, but if you're up there and you can hear me, please show me the way. I'm at the end of my rope. Show me the way, God.
Mr. Bailey, you all right? Don't drink anymore, Mr. Bailey. Please, you don't feel good.
Bailey? You say Bailey? Which Bailey?
This gentleman is Mr. Bailey, George Bailey.
George Bailey, huh? And the next time you talk to my wife like that, she'll get worse. It isn't enough she slaves teaching your stupid kids how to read and write. You got to follow up.
You get out of here, Mr. Welch. You hit my best friend. Get out.
All right, then.
Mr. Bailey, you okay?
Who's that?
Mr. Welch, but don't worry. He don't come in this place no more. I'll get something for your face. It's bleeding.
I'm all right. But
please, don't go away, Mr. Bailey. Please, don't go away.
Well, George left Martini's Cafe 5 minutes ago, Clarence. He's at the river now, on the bridge, looking at the water. Are you ready, Clarence?
All ready, sir.
Very well. Save George Bailey's life, and you'll get your wings.
My wings. Oh, thank you, Joseph. George! George Bailey! Get away from that bridge! You hear me? George! George!
In just a moment, we'll bring you Act 3 of It's a Wonderful Life, starring Jimmy Stewart, Donna Reed, and Victor Moore. The popular theory about beautiful blondes is that they're content to be merely decorative. Our lovely guest tonight, Miss Susan Blanchard, completely disproves that idea. Besides being a hard-working fox starlet, Susan, I understand you're a wonderful cook.
I really love housekeeping, Mr. Keeley. But most of all, I enjoy the training I get at the studio. It's work, but it's fun, too.
You're an Easterner, aren't you, Susan?
Yes, a native New Yorker.
I thought so.
It was the Broadway theater that inspired me to think of show business as a career.
Well, that's interesting.
I used to save my allowance and go to every play I could. One of my favorite actresses was Jane Wyatt.
Uh-huh.
Imagine, Mr. Keeley, what a thrill it was for me to meet her right here in Hollywood.
Jane Wyatt's latest picture, Boomerang, was made in the East, I understand.
Mm-hmm, yes. But she and Dana Andrews, who stars in Boomerang with her, we're in Hollywood to see a studio showing of a picture.
Oh, I see.
Jane Wyatt is my ideal of a stage and screen star. So talented and so lovely to look at. Just as lovely in real life, too.
She is indeed.
It wasn't long before I discovered that she's as keen about Lux toilet soap for beauty care as I am. You know, I'm a Lux girl, too.
We're glad to hear you say that, Miss Blanchard, because that's a very beautiful Lux complexion I see before me. Just right for blue eyes and ash blonde hair.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. Any girl in pictures is delighted to find out about Lux toilet soap as a beauty care. Active lather facials are so quick and easy, and they really make a difference in your skin.
Thousands of busy, attractive women have discovered that, Miss Blanchard. Daily Lux soap complexion care does make skin lovelier. Otherwise, it wouldn't be the choice of 9 out of 10 screen stars.
Lux toilet soap is all around beauty care for me. I use it as a bath soap, too. It has such delightful perfume, leaves a lovely fragrance on the skin.
Thank you, Miss Susan Blanchard. I hope our audience will be seeing that lovely Lux complexion of yours in a screen close-up one of these days. Now, back to our producer, William Keeley.
Act 3 of It's a Wonderful Life, starring Jimmy Stewart, Donna Reed, and Victor Moore. Numb with despair, convinced, as Mr. Potter said, that he's worth more dead than alive, George Bailey stands on a bridge, staring at the dark and frigid waters below. Suddenly, there's a splash.
Help! Help! I'm drowning! Help! Help!
No, that's not George. It's Clarence, the apprentice angel. And there goes George in after him. It's a few minutes later now, and in the bridgekeeper shack, George and Clarence are drying off.
You both sure you're all right? You want a doctor?
No, I'm all right.
Oh, I'm fine. This underwear, I didn't have time to get anything more stylish. My wife gave me this on my last birthday. I passed away in it.
You what, mister?
I see Tom Sawyer is drying out, too.
Who?
My book. I left in such a hurry, I brought Tom Sawyer with me.
Hey, how'd you happen to fall in?
Oh, I jumped in. I jumped in to save you.
Jumped in to save me?
Well, I did, didn't I? You didn't go through with it, did you?
Go through with what?
Suicide.
Hey, it's against the law to commit suicide around here.
Yeah, it's against the law where I come from, too.
Where do you come from?
Heaven.
Oh, that's very funny.
Your lip's bleeding.
Yeah, I got a bust in the jaw in answer to a prayer.
Oh, no, George, I'm the answer to your prayer.
Hey, how'd you know my name?
Oh, I know all about you.
Well, who are you supposed to be, anyway?
Clarence Oddbody, AS2.
Clarence Oddbody. What's the AS2 for?
Angel, second class.
Hey, I'm getting out of here. You may not need a doctor, but I do.
Here we are, my good man.
Hey, look here. Why'd you want to save me?
Because I'm your guardian angel, George.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. Well, you look like about the kind of an angel I'd get. What happened to your wings?
Well, I haven't won my wings yet. That's why I'm an angel, second class.
Oh, I see.
But you can help me earn them, George, by letting me help you.
Oh, don't happen to have 8,000 bucks on you, do you?
Oh, no. We don't use money in heaven.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I keep forgetting. Oh, I see. Comes in pretty handy down here, bub.
Oh, tut.
Whereas I found it out a little late. You know, I'm worth more dead than alive.
You mustn't talk like that. Joseph will never give me my wings if you keep feeling that way. You just don't realize what you've done for your folks. Why, if it hadn't been for
yes,
you...
Yes, if it hadn't been for me, everybody would be better off. My wife and my kids and my friends.
Oh, this is not going to be easy.
We'd all be better off if I hadn't been born.
What did you say?
I said I wish I'd never been born.
George, that's wonderful.
It's wonderful? What?
The idea you just gave me. Well, you got your wish. You've never been born.
I've never been born?
Exactly. No worries, no $8,000 to get, nothing. You simply don't exist.
All right.
George, I can do things, strange things. I can show you the world, George, the way it would be if you hadn't been born.
Hey, wait a minute. This ear of mine. Hey, say something else in that bad ear.
You don't have a bad ear anymore. Oh, I don't think you're concentrating. Oh. Don't you see? You're not the George Bailey you think you are. You're, well, you're nobody.
Oh, that's the doggonest thing I ever saw, that ear.
Your lips stopped bleeding, too.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, what's happening around here? What is this, anyway? I need a drink. That's what I need. What about you, Angel? You want a drink?
Well, I don't quite know.
Come on. We'll go as soon as our clothes are dry.
Clothes are dry, George.
Hey, so they are. That's funny. Well, look, let's get dressed and we'll stroll over to Martini's and then... excuse me. I mean, I'll stroll. You fly.
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't have my wings.
You don't have your wings yet. No. That's right. I forgot that again. A couple of drinks and we'll both fly.
What'll you have, fellas?
Hey, where's the boss? Where's Martini?
Look, wise guy, I'm the boss, see?
Okay, well, double scotch, quick, will you?
What's yours?
You know what? I just love some mulled wine.
Huh?
Heavy on the cinnamon and light on the cloves. Off with you, my lad, and lively now.
Now, cut it out.
Oh, come on here. Just give him the same as I ordered. He's okay.
Two double scotch.
What about this place? It's all changed.
All of Bedford Falls has changed. You're having your wish, George. You've never been born. Oh, there'll be lots of things you've never seen before. Oh, good. Somebody just made it.
Made what?
Every time a bell rings, it means some angel's got his wings.
What'd you say?
Clarence, I don't think you better talk about angels around here. Yeah.
Don't they believe in angels?
Oh, yeah, they believe in them, but you know, it's just a little
thing. Then
why
should people be surprised when they see one?
Don't mind him, bartender. He's just a little fella. He just never grew up. And How old are you anyway, Clarence?
Well, next May, I'll be 293.
That does it. A couple of pixies, huh? Go on, get you. Hear me, get.
Where's Martini? Will you
stop asking about Martini? Ain't here any... Hey, yo. Rami, didn't I tell you never to come panhandling around here?
George, look.
Hey, it's Mr. Gower. Mr. Gower. Listen, Mr. Gower, don't you know me? This is George Bailey.
You buy me a drink, mister? Just one drink, will you, mister?
Pinky!
Yeah, Nick.
Throw the rummy out.
Oh, no, please.
Hey, bartender, that's Mr. Gower, the druggist.
That rum head spent 20 years in jail for poisoning some kid. If you knew him, you must be a jailbird yourself. Pinky, here's two more. Get him out of here.
Get up, George. Good thing you threw us in a snowbank, huh?
Hey, where's Mr. Gower?
Mr. Gower doesn't know you, George. You see, you weren't there to stop him from putting poison into that prescription.
What do you mean I wasn't there? Look, tell me, what are you? Are you a hypnotist?
George.
Look, well, why am I seeing all these strange things here?
Don't you understand? It's because you were not born.
Well, if I wasn't born, then who am I?
Nobody. You have no identity.
Well, what do you mean I have no identity?
No papers, no driver's license, no 4F card, no insurance policy.
Zuzu's bell.
What?
Zuzu's bell. I bought my little girl a bell to hang on the Christmas tree, and I forgot to give it to her. I've got it in my... It's gone. It's gone, too. Everything's gone.
But you've been given a great gift, George. A chance to see what the world would be like if you'd never been born.
You're crazy. You're crazy as a bedbug, and you're driving me crazy, too. Now, look, I'm going home to my wife and family. Do you understand that? And I'm going home alone.
Following him.
Joseph, oh, I'll stay near him, sir. Poor George. He's seeing Main Street now the way it'd be if he hadn't lived. The thing that's really shocked him, sir, is the building and loan office. Know what's there now? Pawn shop.
What's he doing? Can you see?
He's talking to Ernie Bishop, the taxi driver. He wants to go home.
You better tag along, Clarence.
Oh, I will, sir. I will.
Come on, step on it, will you, Ernie? Get me home. I'm off my nut.
Where do you live, buddy?
Oh, now, doggone it, Ernie. Don't you start pulling that stuff on me. 323
Sycamore. 323
Sycamore? Yeah, hurry up. For the Zuzu's sake.
Okay, buddy.
Hey, look, Ernie, I don't know what's happened. I'm going crazy or something. I got some bad liquor. Now, look, tell me this now. You're Ernie Bishop, right? And you live with your wife and kid down...
You see my wife?
What do you mean? I've seen your wife. I've been in your house 100 times. What do you... We built it for you, didn't we?
Bud. My wife took the kid and ran away 5 years ago, and I ain't never seen you before in my life, see?
Okay, Ernie, okay. Just step on it. Get me home.
Mary! Mary, where are you? Janie, Petey, Zuzu! Zuzu, where are you?
This is just an old, abandoned house, George. You have no wife. No children.
Where are they? What have you done with them?
Hey, I'll face that pimp. See, I told you.
All right, up with your hands.
Oh, Bert the cop. Thank heaven you're here.
Now, look, why don't you be a good fella and I'll take you to a doctor.
Bert, listen to me. What's the matter with you guys? Now, listen, it's that fellow there. He says he's an angel. He tried to hypnotize me.
I hate to use my nightstick, but I guess I...
Ow!
Run, George, run. He can't hit you while I'm...
Ow!
Fighting him. George, run. My teeth aren't what they used to be. Joseph, help! Joseph! Joseph!
Where'd they go, Ernie? Where'd they go?
I don't know. They just disappeared.
Clarence!
Oh, Joseph, I hope you don't mind my calling on you like I did.
It was very irregular, Clarence. You're by yourself again. Where's George?
He's at his mother's house, sir.
Well, if George hasn't been born, he has no mother.
Oh, he's being very stubborn, sir. He'll just have to find these things out for himself.
But his mother, that's a terribly bitter blow to a man, his old mother not knowing him.
You mean I shouldn't have let him...
I mean you better find him right away. Oh, and stop fighting policemen, Clarence.
I'm here again, George.
My mother, my own mother didn't know me. If only Harry were here. My brother were only back from Washington.
Your brother fell through the ice and was drowned at the age of 9.
Well, that's a lie. He got the Congressional Medal of Honor. He saved the lives of every man on that transport.
Every man on that transport died. Strange, isn't it? Each man's life touches so many other lives. Harry wasn't there to save them because you weren't there to save Harry. Don't you see, George, you really had a wonderful life. Don't you see what a mistake it would be to throw it away?
Clarence?
Yes?
Where's Mary? Please, where's my wife?
I'm not supposed to tell.
Tell me where she is.
You're not going to like it, George.
Where is she? I'll choke it out of you if I have to. Where's my wife?
The library. She works there. She's just about to lock up for the night. So I, George! George! Come back! Oh, there must be some easier way for me to get my wings.
Mary. Mary.
I'm sorry, the library's closed.
Mary, it's George. Don't you know me?
No, I don't know you. Let me go.
Mary, please, don't do this to me, Mary. Please, help me. Help me. Where are our kids, Mary? I need you, Mary.
Oh, get
please.
Away from me. Help! Help!
Help me. Help me, Mary. I'm George. Mary!
Clarence.
Oh, where is he, Joseph? Where's George? I'm afraid I've lost him, sir.
You knew you shouldn't have let him try to see Mary. Now they're after him, a mob. They think he was trying to hurt her.
Joseph, I won't even get one wing, will I?
You have one more chance, Clarence. Get over to the bridge by the river. I think George has seen just about enough.
But the mob...
Oh, don't worry. They've lost him, too. Now hurry up.
Oh, thank you, Joseph. Thank you.
Clarence! Clarence, where are you?
I'm here, George.
Help me, Clarence. Get me back. I don't care what happens to me. Only get me back to my wife and kids, please. I want to live again.
Oh, thank you, George. Thank you, boy.
I want to live again, please. Oh, God, please let me live again.
George? Is that you down there, George?
Now get out of here, Bert. Get out of here. You come in any closer, I'll let you have it.
What the hell are you yelling for, George?
Come on. George. George, Bert. Bert, do you know me?
No, yeah. I've been looking all over town for you. Where you been?
Hey, Bert. Bert. I'm alive again, Bert.
You sure you're all right? Hey, your mouth's bleeding.
It is. Hey, my mouth's bleeding. Bert, look at the blood come out of there, would you? And where's Zuzu's Christmas bell, Bert? I had it right in my pocket. Here it is! Hey, it's in my pocket. What do you know about it? Hey, Merry Christmas, Bert!
Well, Merry Christmas. Get in the car. I'll drive you home.
You will, Bert. We'll do that. And turn the siren wide open, huh? Merry Christmas, Bedford Falls. Hey, Merry Christmas, old building alone. Merry Christmas, Mr. Potter. Yippee! Come on. Hey, Bert, come on in with me, huh? What are these people, these reporters? Hey, Merry Christmas, reporters. Hey, Mr. Bank Examiner, Merry
Mr.
Christmas.
Mr. Bailey, George. There's a deficit.
I know, $8,000 up that, huh?
George, I've got a little paper here. I'm sorry.
I bet it's a warrant for my arrest. Isn't that wonderful? Merry Christmas. Hey, where's Mary, you know? Look at this wonderful old drafty house. Shouldn't it wonder? Have you seen my wife? Where's Mary?
Daddy,
Mary!
Daddy,
Kid! Hey, Kid Janie! Petey! Hey, I could eat you up. Where's your mother?
She went looking for you, Daddy, with Uncle Billy.
Oh,
Daddy!
Zuzu, my little ginger snap. How do you feel, huh?
Fine, Daddy. Not a snitch of temper.
Not a snitch of temper. Hallelujah!
George, darling!
It's Mommy! Mommy's home!
Mary!
George, where have you been?
Oh, Mary.
George,
oh, Mary.
George.
Now, look, just let me touch you. Oh, you're real, Mary. Oh, you've no idea what happened to me.
You've no idea what's happened either. They're on their way here.
Who's on their way? Oh, the police department? I don't... The FBI? The National Guard? I'm alive again, Mary. Oh, listen, Mary. I'm alive again.
Oh, yes, darling, yes. Now close your eyes and come on downstairs.
What is it? We can't open my eyes yet, Mary? What's going on here?
Now, keep your eyes closed. Now, I'll just walk you over here by the Christmas tree and...
Well, the people. I hear lots of people. What is it? Lots of people.
Just one minute now. We're all ready, Uncle Billy. Come in, everybody.
George, look. Just look.
Uncle Billy.
Money, George. A laundry basket filled with money. Well, money for you. Mary did it, George. Mary.
I don't understand. What money? What...
People heard you in trouble, darling. These people, your friends, they've collected this money for you, the $8,000.
Charlie. Hey, there's Martini. Mr. Gower. Hey, how are you, Mr. Gower? Mrs. Thompson.
Ed, Tom, everybody.
None of us would have a roof over our heads if it wasn't for you, George.
Gosh, this is wonderful. Hey, Mary, look. Look who's coming in. Mother. Hi, Mother. Hey, and Harry.
Got Mary's telegram, George.
I flew in as fast as
I
could.
Hey, everybody, a toast. How about a toast?
Oh, good idea, Ernie. A toast to my big brother, George, the richest man in town.
Good old acquaintance.
Daddy, that Christmas bell. You didn't forget.
Forget? Here, honey. Here's your bell.
Daddy. Dolly, what's this on the table here? This is for...
The Adventures of Tom Sawyer.
Look, there's something written in it.
Dear George, remember no man is a failure who has friends. Thanks for the wings, love, Clarence.
Clarence?
Yeah, he's a very dear friend of mine.
Daddy, Mrs. Wells says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
That's right, Zuzu. That's right. That's right. Attaboy, Clarence. Attaboy, Clarence. Happy landing.
It's a wonderful life so long as we can have such fine performances as we enjoyed tonight. From Jimmy Stewart, Donna Reed, and Victor Moore. Jimmy, I'd like to thank whatever guardian angel whisked you back from Texas for our show this evening.
Well, that guardian angel was an airline's wing, Bill.
You were in Texas for the premiere of his picture, weren't you, Jimmy?
Yeah, Frank Capra and I went down for 5 openings as many nights. Pretty good
all
down there in Texas.
Texas,
yeah.
Jimmy?
Yeah, every one of them. The 5 premieres over Texas. You know, it's a pretty big state. Takes that many to do it.
Jimmy, I'm sure your fans were proud to read that you received an honorary degree from Princeton just the other week.
Yes, how about that, Jimmy? Do we call you professor now?
No. It's just an M.A.
Master of Arts?
Well, it might have been. I don't know. It might be for murdering architecture. That's what I studied.
Well, you know, Donna has an honorary degree to her credit, too. LLC.
What's that, Bill?
LLC? Well, you can see for yourself. A lovely Lux complexion.
Well, thank you, Bill. Or rather, thank Lux toilet soap. It's a wonderful complexion care. I use it faithfully.
With wonderful results, I see.
Good night.
Good night, and thanks a million. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Kitzel, what are you doing here?
Pardon the intrusion, Mr. Benny, but I came over to thank you for the Christmas presents you sent me and to wish you a happy new year.
Well, well, the same to you, Mr. Kitzel. So you like the sweater I sent you, eh?
I have never in my life owned such a beautiful slopover.
No, Mr. Kitzel, you mean slipover.
Slopover, I mean it's too big.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, why didn't you return it?
Well, I like it that way because it makes me look like a hep cat.
A hep cat?
Hey, Baba Riba. Zip-a-de-doo-dee. Hey, Baba Riba.
I know.
Do you also know the song about the cement mix, Mr.?
Yes. And, Mr. Kitzel, I'm glad my present suited you so well.
Yes, you know, I liked it so much, I started needing a pair of stockings to match the sweater.
You did?
Yes. But a funny thing happened. While I was sitting in the rocking chair, my wife came in and saw me knitting.
Uh-huh.
She got all excited and thought we was going to have another baby.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
By the way, Mr. Kitzel, as long as you're here, would you like to sit down and hear the rest of the program?
Oh, I'm sorry, but I got to leave.
Oh, you should stay, Mr. Kitzel, because tonight our guest star is Lauren Bacall.
Lauren Bacall? Who, who, who?
Who, who, what?
Who, who's going? I'm going to stay.
Well, good. But Don... John, you're mistaken about Lauren Bacall. She won't be here tonight.
Oh, why not?
Never mind. We haven't got time to discuss it. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Tell them what happened, Jack.
Mary, we've got a program to do. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Anyway, Don, the trouble started after you left the rehearsal yesterday at Jack's house.
Jack's house.
Lauren Bacall hadn't showed up as yet to rehearse her part. And Phil and Dennis and I decided to stick around and play a little gin rummy. So we went in the den and sat down. Say, Jack, where are you and Lauren going to rehearse?
In the library.
Then we can stay here in the den and play cards, can't we?
Yep, that'll be all right. Rochester, will you bring in a deck of cards, please?
Yes, sir. What cards do I bring? The red backs or the blue backs?
Oh, it doesn't make any difference.
Yes, it does. The reds are 40 cents, the blues 50.
Bring them a deck of cards. They won't quibble about the price. Now, come on, Rochester. I want you to go in the library with me and help me get things ready.
Yes, sir.
Now, Rochester, I want to make a good impression on Miss Bacall, so see that there's a nice fire burning in the fireplace. Move the divan so it'll be nice and cozy in front of the fire. Turn the lights down low, turn on the phonograph, and put on some nice, soft, romantic music.
Want me to burn some incense and fan you with a palm leaf?
No, that won't be necessary. Now, let's see. I think these horn-rimmed glasses make me look a little too old. I guess I'll take them off.
Oh, boss. I wouldn't do that if I were you. Remember what happened the time Miss Ann Sheridan came over to rehearse with you and you took off your glasses?
Oh, nothing happened.
When Miss Sheridan came in, you rushed over to where you thought you saw her, put your arms around the bridge lamp, kissed the parrot, and said, "Why, Annie, you bit me!"
That's because it was dark. Now, let's see. Oh, that must be Miss Bacall now. Rochester, you answer the door. I want to sit down and make myself look alluring. I mean, relax. How do I look?
Fine, boss, but aren't you overdoing it with that rose in your teeth?
Rochester. What are you laughing at?
Ramona Benny.
The rose is for my lapel. Oh, answer the door.
Yes, sir.
Is Mr. Benny at home?
Yes. Come right in, Miss Bacall.
Rochester, who is it?
Miss Lauren Bacall.
Well, Lauren Bacall.
You were expecting maybe Mrs. Nussbaum?
Rochester, you can get lost now.
Yes.
Come in, Lauren. This is in flesh, Dieter. I mean, indeed, a pleasure. make yourself comfortable. sit down.
No, thanks. I'll just lean here against the door.
Gosh, Lauren. Seeing you there reminds me of your first picture, The Have and Have Not. You were leaning against the door, just like that. And then you said your famous line.
You mean, if you want anything, just whistle.
Yeah.
Well, Lauren. Lauren, shall we start rehearsing?
No hurry, no hurry. You got a cigarette?
A cigarette? Yes, yes, yes. Here you are.
Thanks. Match?
Match.
You know, Lauren, that cigarette I gave you was a Lucky Strike.
I know, and it's my favorite brand, too.
Really?
Yeah. They're so round, so firm, so fully packed. So free and easy on the draw.
Gee, Effie Boone never sounded like that. Gosh, Lauren, I can just picture you in a bathing suit holding up that big tobacco leaf. And you know, Lauren, Lucky Strikes are made of that fine, that light, that naturally mild tobacco.
Well, what do you know? And I thought Mother told me everything.
Well, live and learn.
You must have learned a lot.
Yes, yes. Well, now let's start rehearsing. Here's your script. We're going to do a sketch based on your picture, To Have and Have Not. You'll play the same part you did in the picture.
Okay.
Well, let's start. I'll take the first line.
Wait a minute, Jack. I'm supposed to lean against the door.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm sorry. Well, we'll start again. You're sore at me, aren't you, Slim?
Sure, Steve. I'm sore at you. I wanted to get even. I brought that bottle of brandy up here to make you feel cheap. But I'm the one who feels cheap.
Well, you've only got yourself to blame, Slim. After all, what did I do?
Nothing. What's more, you don't have to do anything. Oh, maybe just whistle. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
No, Slim. I got a better use for my lips. Come here and let me kiss you.
All right, but first take that rose out of your teeth.
I'm so sorry. You know, I meant to put that in my lapel, in my lapel. Now let's start the scene over again. You're sore at me, aren't you, Slim?
Sure, Steve, I'm sore at you. I wanted to get even. I brought that bottle up here to make you...
Who brought what bottle up where?
Curly.
Well, St. Peter must have left the gate open, and look who fell out. Oh, leave a lamp burning in the window, Mother. I may be a little late.
Phil.
Ah, yes, there's good news tonight. Yeah. Well, introduce me, Jackson. Introduce me.
All right, all right. This is Miss Lauren Bacall. Lauren, this is my colleague, Phil Harris.
Well, hoity-toity. I'm a colleague now.
Yeah. And I go already.
Okay, okay.
Now, come on, Lauren. Let's take that kissing scene again. We'll take that kissing scene again. Let's start where I... who can that be? I left strict orders not to be disturbed.
Mr. Benny, Mr. Humphrey Bogart's at the door.
Humphrey Bogart?
Oh, Jack, I forgot to tell you. Bogey said he dropped by here and picked me up. You know, he and I are married.
I know. Who do you think played the violin at your wedding? Anyway, he can wait outside. We got a scene to rehearse, and we're going to do it.
Hello, baby. Hiya, Jack.
Look, Humphrey, we're right in the middle of the rehearsal.
Oh, that's all right, Jack. Go right ahead.
We won't be long, honey.
That's all right, baby. You know, Jack, I'm glad to see you again. You're my favorite comedian.
I am? Well, that's good. Now, Lauren, I mean, Miss Bacall... Oh, by the way, what should I call you? Lauren or Miss Bacall?
Mrs. Bogart.
Now, let's get on with the rehearsal, Mr. Bogart. Start with your... starting with your last speech. Huh?
Okay. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
No, Slim. I got a better use for my lips. Come here and let me kiss you.
What a comedian. What a comedian.
Look, Humphrey, I'm trying to...
Mr. Benny, there's a telephone call for you.
Oh. Well, pardon me a minute, folks. I'll be right back.
How's it going, baby?
Oh, brother.
Yeah, I thought so. Say, baby, I want you to do something.
What is it?
When you get to kiss him, just put one arm around him and run your other hand through his hair.
Why?
I want to find out if he really wears one. Hey, what does Benny want to be a great lover for, anyway?
Well, why shouldn't he? After all, he played a romantic lead and the horn blows at midnight. You saw that, didn't you?
Yeah, and they called our last picture The Big Sleep. By the way, what's this sketch you're rehearsing with Benny?
To have and have not. We're rehearsing the big scene you and I did in the picture.
So? Which one of you is playing my part?
He's coming back.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had to answer the phone, but, well, that's the price of fame.
Who was it?
Wrong number. I mean, my sponsor called because he sent me the wrong number of tickets to the broadcast. Now, let's get on with the rehearsal, Lauren. We'll start with my line. Well, you've only got yourself to blame, Slim. After all, what did I do?
Nothing. What's more, you don't have to do anything. Oh, maybe just whistle. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
No, Slim. I got a better use for my lips. Come here and let me kiss you.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. Hold it. You're doing it all wrong.
Wrong?
Yeah. When you get ready to kiss a girl, you put your arms around her gently, tenderly.
What?
Hey, you're not supposed to grab her by the earlobes and pull yourself up.
Oh, I see.
And now watch me. Come here, baby. Read that line again.
Okay. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
No, Slim. I got a better use for my lips. Come here and let me kiss you. Like this.
I see. Humphrey, I get the idea. That's enough, Humphrey. Look, you can do that at home. Look. Humphrey, I'm paying her by the hour. Stop! I'm supposed to do that. I get the idea now, Bogey. Let you and I take it again, Lauren.
Say, Jack, our gin rummy game's over, so I thought I'd come in here and watch you rehearse.
All right, but be quiet. Now, come on, Lauren. Start with your line again.
Okay. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
Ah, Slim. I got a better use. Come here, and I'll kiss you. Like this.
No, Jack. No, you're doing it all wrong. Here, let me show you again.
What?
I'll do it with Mary this time. Are you ready, Mary?
Am I ready? I was puckered up when I walked in here.
But look, Mary isn't even...
Come on, Mary. You take baby's line.
Okay. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
Oh, no. I've got a better use for my lips. Come here and let me kiss you. Like this.
Wait a minute. What is this? What is this anyway? Step aside, Mary. I want to talk to
Mr. Bogart.
Yeah, and I want to talk to him, too.
Dennis.
Say, he's cute.
You haven't got a chance, sister. I send all my Coca-Cola tops to Mary.
Dennis.
Now, listen to me, Bogart. I tell you, kissing a woman I love, see? And you ain't muscling in on my racket, see? Those lips ain't big enough for the both of us, see? Now, get out of here before you get hurt, see? Get out, see? Out, see? Out, see? Out!
Dennis.
See?
Come on, baby, let's get out of here. This guy's tough.
Bogart, Lauren, come back!
Dennis! Dennis, I can't believe it. You know what you did? You frightened Humphrey Bogart.
Sure.
Dennis, what's that you got in your hand?
A picture of my mother.
Oh, no wonder! God, now Lauren will never be on my program. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart for appearing on my program tonight. They can currently be seen in their Warner Brothers picture, The Big Sleep. Well, I better rush home now. Oh, taxi, taxi. Oh, taxi. Oh, doorman, get me a taxi, will you?
Look, bud, if you want a taxi, just whistle.
What?
You know how to whistle, don't you? Just put your lips together and blow.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, what do you know? It works.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
There is a Santa Claus, by Francis Farcellus Church. Is there a Santa Claus? We take pleasure in answering at once, and thus prominently, the communication below, expressing at the same time our great gratification that its faithful author is numbered among the friends of the Sun. Dear Editor, I am 8 years old. Some of my little friends say there is no Santa Claus. Papa says, if you see it in the Sun, it's so. Please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus? Virginia O'Hanlon, 115 West 95th Street. Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe except they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant in his intellect, as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole of truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus! It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus? You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch in all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus. But even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that is no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing in the lawn? Of course not. But that's no proof that they are not there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders there are unseen and unseeable in the world. You may tear apart the baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside, but there is a veil covering the unseen world, which not the strongest man, nor even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived, could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernal beauty and glory beyond. Is it all real? Ah, Virginia, in all this world there is nothing else real and abiding. No Santa Claus. Thank God he lives, and he lives forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia, nay, 10 times 10,000 years from now, he will continue to make glad the heart of childhood. End of editorial. This recording is in the public domain.
Campbell's Soup bring you Amos and Andy. Today, Amos and Andy received many Christmas greetings. Both boys are extremely happy and are looking forward to Christmas Day. As the scene opens now, we find Amos in the front room of his flat. Andy has just entered carrying a few packages. A small lighted Christmas tree sits on a table in one corner. In the back room, Amos's baby boy is asleep in his crib, and his little daughter is preparing for bed. Ruby and her mother have just gone out for a short while. There.
Well, come in there, son. You look like Santa Claus there with all that stuff.
Yeah, how is your boy?
Oh,
how
fine.
Is
fine. Look, Christmas.
Yeah, same to you. Doggone, that tree looks good.
Yeah, don't it look pretty?
Yeah, wait a minute. Let me lay these packages down here on the sofa.
Oh, you're making the rounds, ain't you, son?
Yeah, making the rounds, spreading good cheer.
Yes, sir.
Oh, boy, that is a pretty tree, too.
Yeah.
Got a lot of lights on there, boy.
Yeah, we saved some of them from last year, and then we got another new string this year and added on to it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Well, we just decorated that tonight.
Uh-huh.
Ruby and Mama is going out to take a few things to some poor people that they know here in town. They'll be gone about an hour.
Yeah, well, I'll leave these packages here.
Leave these, all of them?
Oh, sure. Here's one for Ruby. Here's one for Mama.
Oh,
there's one for you right there.
Oh, thank you.
And there's a little rattle in here for your baby.
Oh, gee whiz, look at this.
And here's a package for your oldest child, your little girl.
Oh, I certainly a Santa Claus this year, Anna. Thank you so much.
Well, that's all right. I see a lot of stuff over at my place from your house.
Yeah, well, just like I told you, Andy, it ain't much, but we want you to know that we love you and we are thinking about you. You know that.
Oh, well, Amos, I feel better this Christmas than I ever felt.
Yeah.
By the way, when you open up your packages?
Well, the kids get up early, and, well, we all get up and start early Christmas morning. And, by the way, don't forget that you promised me this morning that you'd be here for Christmas dinner with us.
Yeah. Well, that sure is nice of you, all right, because the other Christmas dinners didn't work out so good.
Oh, it didn't, huh? Well, we want you here, so now we're going to count on that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's swell. Oh. Well, I gotta get going, son. I gotta drop in on 2 or 3 people to say hello to them.
Yeah, well, I hate to have you rush off, Andy. Don't you want to sit down a little while?
No, I'll get going, son. Just want to come by here and kind of wish you a Merry Christmas tomorrow.
Uh-huh. Well, you know I wish you one, son.
Yeah, by the way, you don't want to go with me now, do you? Stop in on some friends or something?
Oh, no, and I can't. I'm going on back now and see that the baby is covered up in the crib and say goodnight to Arbadella. You know, she wants to know all about Christmas. She can't wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that's great, son. Well, Merry Christmas again.
Well, same to you, and thank you for the packages, Andy.
You're welcome, Amos. You're welcome. So long.
So long, son. Well, honey, you was in bed, ain't you?
Daddy, can I turn on the little radio for a minute before I go to sleep?
Well, just for a minute or two, I'll snap it on for you. Say, we let it warm up a few seconds. We don't want to wake up baby, you know.
Oh, music never wakes him up, Daddy.
Yeah, well, now, let me straighten your covers out a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
You said your prayer?
Oh, Mama heard my prayers before she went out, Daddy.
Oh, that's good, yeah. Glad of that.
The Paul Taylor Chorus continues with the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah, well, now, you get under covers, honey.
Daddy, could you get some Christmas music on the radio?
Why, darling, this is the very best Christmas music you could get. This is the Lord's Prayer.
I've been saying the Lord's Prayer with Mama. She's been teaching it to me.
Yeah, I know she is.
What does the Lord's Prayer mean, Daddy?
Well, it means an awful lot. And with the world like it is today, darling, it seems to have a bigger meaning than ever before.
What does the Lord's Prayer mean?
The Lord's Prayer? Well, darling, I'll try to explain it to you.
Oh, will you, Daddy?
Yeah, now you lay down and listen. The first line of the Lord's Prayer is this. Our Father, which art in heaven, that means Father of all that is good, where no wrong can dwell. Now the next line is, hallowed be thy name. That means, darling, that we should love and respect all that is good. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. That means, darling, as we clean our hearts of all hate and selfishness and fill our hearts with love, the good, the true, and the beautiful, then this earth will be exactly like heaven.
Oh, that would be wonderful, Daddy.
Then it says, give us this day our daily bread. Now, that means to feed our hearts and minds with kindness, love, and courage, which will make us strong for our daily task.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. You remember the golden rule?
Oh, yes, sir.
Well, that means that we must keep the golden rule and do unto others as we would want them to do unto us. And then it says, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. That means, my darling, to ask God to help us do and see and think right, so that we will neither be led or tempted by anything that is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, for thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen. That means, darling, that all the world and everything that's in it belongs to God's kingdom. Everything. Mommy, your daddy, your little brother, your grandma, you and everybody. And as we know that, and act as if we know it, my darling, that is the real spirit of Christmas.
Oh, that's good, Daddy.
Well, darling, I guess I ought to turn off the radio and let you go to sleep.
Good night, Daddy.
Good night, my sweetheart.
Daddy.
Yes?
Will you leave the radio on while I go to sleep?
All right, I'll leave it on for a couple of minutes, and I'll come back and turn it off, and you listen to the Christmas music.
Tomorrow is Christmas, the day of all days when old friendships and family ties are renewed and strengthened. This year, more than ever, the real fundamental things in our life stand out from the trivial and inconsequential. The Christmas service at church has more meaning. The old words, freedom, equality, tolerance, character, take on new values. And most of all, we realize the importance in our lives of the people we like most. Some of us, just as some of you, are fortunate to have our families with us this Christmas. Some of us, just as some of you, have folks in army camp, on ship, or on foreign shore. But this Christmas, there is a greater appreciation of family ties, of friends, than in the past 24 years. We think of you as friends of ours. And as such, Amos and Andy and I, and the makers of Campbell's Soup, wish you, with special warmth and meaning, a Merry Christmas. Andy in person will return to you tomorrow at this same hour. This is Bill Hay speaking for Campbell's Soup, bidding you all good night.
And I am bidding you all good night as well for tonight. I have so much more wonderful programming tomorrow night and Sunday. Some of the ones that I will probably be playing are the original Pinocchio with Cecil B. DeMille presenting it. Cecil B. DeMille, can you believe it? He's like the Ten Commandments guy and very, very famous. I also have Holiday Inn with Bing Crosby and Dinah Shore. Christmas in Connecticut with none other than Ronald Reagan and Jane Wyman. And some other stuff. I have Miracle on 34th Street with the original cast, every one of them. Maureen O'Hara, Edmund Gwenn, John Payne. And what else do I have? I have so much good stuff here. So you guys, I hope you come back tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 Eastern. It will be a full three-hour show tomorrow night. And I wish you a good night, and I hope to see you again tomorrow. Happy holidays. I think I'll play a little tune on the way out here. Good night, and thank you, everybody who came into the chat room so I didn't feel lonely. I appreciate that. Love you guys. Good night.
Thank you.